under the sea, under the sea. Darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day. Out in the sun, they slave away. While we're devoting full time to floating under the sea.
According to a study released this week by European scientists, there's an enormous oceanic migration on its way, involving all kinds of marine critters, from tiny plankton cells to giant whales. This may be the largest movement of marine species seen on Earth in more than 2 million years, according to the scientists. The gradual warming of our oceans appears to be driving this migration, and Canada's Arctic is one of the watery highways on which it's taking place. Boris Worm studies the oceans at Dalhousie University. Hi, welcome back.
Hi, Stephanie.
Is it time to rewrite the lyrics to Northwest Passage to talk of whales and plankton taking that fabled route?
Sure, yeah, and it's part of a global redistribution of marine life. Lots of species are moving northward as waters warm, and we knew that for a while now. But now there's a new dimension to this, as we're discovering that as the sea ice in the Arctic melts, Northwest Passage and also the Northeast Passage of Russia become ice-free during parts of the summer. And they have been closed for a long time. I mean, John Franklin found this out when he tried to sail it in the 19th century and failed and died. And now it's quite different. I met a sailor last year and talked to him, a French crew who sailed through the Northwest Passage and is wide open and clear. And that's becoming increasingly common. And now we're seeing that more and more animals and plants also make that passage for the first time in thousands of years.
We've mentioned whales and plankton. Who else is on the move?
Well, all kinds of species are moving northwards, as I said. For example, the Vikings used to eat mussels off Spitsbergen. We know from historical records that there were blue mussels, which also we have in this region. They were in Spitsbergen, an Arctic island far off the coast of Norway. And they haven't been seen there in 1,000 years, and now they're reappearing as waters are warm enough to transport their larvae up there, and so they survive. A tiny glass-like plankton species called a diatom has made its way through the Northwest Passage, we think, into the North Atlantic for the first time in 800,000 years. So that's far longer than people existed on this planet. And it tells you just how much of a barrier that sea ice was to a lot of species that hadn't been able to cross in that long. And so it's a geological event, if you will, that this blockage is now partially removed and increasingly removed, and species can travel through.
On the larger end of the spectrum from plankton, there's a particular kind of whale that's appeared there as well.
Well, that story just blew me away. I had an interest in gray whales for a long time because historical records showed that we once had them in the Atlantic as well as in the Pacific. Now, commercial whaling has driven them to extinction in the Atlantic. They hadn't been seen in 300 years. And just last year, in May 2010, a single about 13-meter-long whale, gray whale, appeared off Israel, of all places, in the Mediterranean. And the only possibility is that this comes from the fairly large population of the Canadian and U.S. West Coast, which travels from Baja California up to Alaska every year. So that's a pretty long migration, some 10,000 kilometers or so. But this particular individual made its way through the Northwest Passage, or maybe through the Northeast Passage, in probably 2009, when there was just a very tiny amount of ice in that area, into the Atlantic, and did at least 12,000-kilometer journey across the Atlantic and somehow in the Mediterranean, went all the way to the end of the Mediterranean, to Israel, where it was seen in fairly poor condition, and it turned around and it was seen off Spain 20 days later. So this whale's moving.
And they know it's the same guy?
They know it's the same guy because they photographed it, and like we have fingerprints, they have particular blotches on the underside of their tail, which you can tell individuals apart from. And this was the same whale. And no surprise, no whale had been seen in 300 years. It would be quite a coincidence if two had made it.
Yeah.
So it's just the one, and we don't know its fate.
But will he be able to find his way back, do you think?
Well, I looked at the ice chart for this year because I was asking myself the same question. And apparently 2011 had the lowest sea ice extent in the Canadian Arctic, or the Arctic as a whole, on record. It's tied with 2006, which is also very, very low. So there's little ice there, and that's good chances for the whale to make its way back, if he finds his way back. I don't know how he navigates over those enormous distances, having never made that migration before. But, you know, it tells you that species are adventurous at times, and when an opportunity opens up for those migrations, some of them go do it.
Yeah, just have a little Mediterranean cruise, I guess.
It's not a good idea. The Mediterranean is very poor in food, and this whale was suffering from that. It was reported to be in poor condition, not starving, but, you know, quite lean.
Can you talk more about the wider consequences of all this movement of species? You know, is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it has a lot of consequences, because we know from lots and lots of studies and experience, both on land and in the water, that when you add a species to an ecosystem where it hadn't been before, the ecosystem changes, sometimes just a little bit and sometimes very dramatically. So it really depends on the species that's making the migration. The gray whale, as I said, previously existed in the Atlantic, so that's a good thing that it returns to a place where it really belongs. Before we drove it out. Other species, it can have negative consequences. For example, off the British Isles, a new toxic kind of jellyfish invaded. That's a southern species. The waters were too cold for that species to live in off the British Isles, and now it's there occasionally, and they have to close beaches because of it. And it's also known to be a voracious predator of fish larvae, so that concerns people. If it gets established, you know, year after year, it could damage fish stocks. Also of concern to myself is that the plankton ecosystem is changing. A number of tiny crustaceans called copepods are the prime food for fish larvae, and like cod larvae, for example. And in the North Sea, it has been shown that they're getting replaced by southern species, which are smaller and less nutritious. And that hurts the larvae, and they survive not as well, and that hurts the replenishment of fish stocks. So there can be some negative, some positive consequences. It really depends on the species we're looking at.
Are there some species that will not be able to keep up with the warming temperatures and won't be able to migrate fast enough to find a new acceptable habitat?
That's a major concern on land. Species that live on mountaintops, for example, how are they going to make their way, if they're not a bird or a butterfly, to the next mountaintops? Plants, for example, or amphibians, they would simply go extinct. Or we help them migrate. That's actually something that's discussed. It's called assisted migration. In the ocean, it's a little bit less of a concern because there's fewer roadblocks, so to speak. It depends on the species, though. Corals are of great concern because they replenish very locally. And if they're driven out by high temperatures, which we're already observing in coral reefs around the world, the question is whether they can migrate fast enough to keep up. So it really, again, depends on the species. Less of a concern in the ocean than on land, though.
What does it all mean for this region?
Well, I think we're witnessing this. This press release has really shown and demonstrated to us how we're witnessing this global redistribution of life. And the ocean of tomorrow will look quite differently in this region as well as on the other side of the Atlantic and the Pacific and really everywhere. There's several things we're concerned about. For example, a warmer world tends to be a sicker world. A lot of diseases thrive better in warmer waters, and we're seeing this on land with some forest diseases or pests in British Columbia and other places.
The pine beetle,
for example, that are thriving in warmer climates. And on this coast, I know that lobstermen are concerned about a particular disease that's called lobster shell rot disease, that seems to be creeping up the coast and that has caused large disruptions of the lobster industry in southern parts of New England. So we're keeping an eye on these developments and just, I guess, have to adapt to these changes as they occur, because there's little we can do.
Boris, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Boris Worm is our oceans guy. Next week, Surf and Turf moves to Mondays. This coming Monday, Andrew Hebda will drop by from the Nova Scotia Museum of Natural History.
Under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day. Out in the sun, they slave away. While we're devoting full time to floating under the sea.
Under the sea.
Under the sea.
Under the sea.
Since life is sweet here, we got to be here naturally.
Naturally. even the sturgeon and the ray. Dig it, the earth and start to play. We got the spirit, you got to hear it under the sea.
And there's more science coming up an hour from now when Michael Bardwaj drops by. What are you working on this week, Michael?
I'm working on a new study that can that kind of explains, well, the frustration that you may feel when you're sitting stuck in a plane that is being de-iced for another hour or two on the tarmac. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, maybe a couple times.
Yeah, I think it's a common experience here in Canada. So there's new research that explains some of the climatic conditions that give rise to the need of de-icing. You would think it'd be about Mother Nature, but it turns out that it's actually the airplanes that are causing all sorts of very interesting and rather annoying microclimates to develop in and around airports. I'm going to have those details later in the show.
All right. More on all that when Michael Bardwaj returns, right after One in a Row by Request.